until we're done with Pierre Maguire. Could be in 20 minutes, could be in 19 minutes, could be in 24 minutes. We don't know. We never know. But good luck.
I mean, he has to take ownership here, too. I mean, coaching staff is showing him, I know, all kinds of video and showing him the do's and don'ts. I think Claude Julien, from what I can gather, has really done everything he can to have a terrific relationship with him. So all those things have been really positive.
So if you were considering to trade Galchenyuk, you couldn't trade him at a worse time. You couldn't be trying to, because there'd be so little value in the return. So I don't really think that's a viable option right now, to be honest.
Right now, Alex is having a tough start, you know, with the amount of ice time he's had on the power play and everything else. When you have Hemsky on your right side, you're not playing with guys that have no skill. So it's not about a situation where we're trying to bury him. I think it's just, again, a situation where we need to make decisions and move players around for the time being to get us going in the right direction.
Pierre LeBrun in the final hour of this show yesterday. Bob McKenzie with Connor McKenna and the gang this morning. And Claude Julien after practice today ahead of the Habs and Leafs tomorrow night.
Hockey insider Pierre Maguire, brought to you by Ye Olde Orchard Pub, with six locations in and around Montreal. YeOldOrchard.com.
How are you, Pierre?
That's a whole lot of attention for a fourth line player.
No kidding.
Dominic Moore would put his hand up in Toronto and say, "Can I get that much attention, please?"
And Dominic Moore has twice as many goals as Alex Galchenyuk.
There you go.
Actually, he's got twice as many goals as anybody on the Habs.
No, don't say that. Wasn't meant to be. I was just talking about fourth line players.
No, I know. Well, Torrey Mitchell is a fourth. You can talk all you want about Alex Hemsky, who's, you know, his career might be hanging in the balance here without being dramatic about it. And Torrey Mitchell is being asked to get them going. Right? That's the situation.
He's very good at that, by the way. Torrey, he's got energy and he's got passion. He's really proud to wear the sweater. There's a lot to be said about somebody like that. There really is. So he, if anybody can stir it up a little bit, he can, which is a positive thing, I think.
All right, we played you the clip following. There's no sense in belaboring this anymore. And by the way, if you're wondering, Galchenyuk sick, was not at practice today. But I want to take you back. We played you the clip of Claude Julien warning his team about the Leafs, how they can eat you up. Today he was asked specifically about the coach of that team.
Well, they're always well prepared, which has been Mike's trademark forever. You know, he gets his players to play hard, and that's what it is. And he's very passionate about his work. Anybody who's followed him and sees him every day and deals with him on the podium where I am standing notices that too.
I'm sure he's made a huge impact on a lot of players. He teaches the game really well. You know, his way of communicating is pretty straightforward, and I'm sure it's, you know, there's no confusion in that locker room, I'm sure.
Carey Price, Claude Julien, again, after practice today. Everybody, I think, knows what happened to the Leafs against the Devils at home. So what specifically would Mike Babcock's message be heading into the game tomorrow night?
Stay out of the penalty box and challenge them to try to beat you 5-on-5. The only chance they have of beating you is if you take penalties and they go on the power play. We want to play 5-on-5 and force them to take penalties against us. That would be the number one, I guarantee you. If it's not the first thing he'll say, it's one of the top three things he'll say. We need to play 5-on-5 and stay out of the box. We want to roll four lines and we want to punish their defense.
So,
the only way to do that is to stay out of the box.
So don't pay any attention to that 0-for-14 because it's bound to turn.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is. And I also think it's probably the only way the Canadians can beat Toronto, because I just don't know if they're getting enough.
Hello.
I'm here.
Okay. Oh, we just lost you there for a split second.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just sitting in my office here. No, the only way they can beat them is Montreal, that is, I believe, is to score on a power play, because 5-on-5, I just don't know how much they're going to handle the puck.
Yeah, and they took, what, 8 penalties against New Jersey the other night.
And they gave up a 5-on-3. They were on the power play, and they gave up a 5-on-3 goal against.
Every time that happens, and it's so rare, I remember watching Sir Savard do it in the late 60s.
Yep.
So it, you know.
How about Mike Richards did it twice?
Yes,
I believe,
Mike Richards.
Toronto.
There's another one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Deneau, Shaw, and Hudon. So they have. We've talked about this, right? Since the end of camp, that the two best looking players on the Canadiens have been Arturi Lehkonen and Charles Hudon.
Agreed.
They have been rewarded. Lehkonen's on the top line on the right wing, and Hudon is now on the. It could be the second, could be the third, whatever.
Yeah.
You want.
I agree. I think that's great. But it tells you Claude's plugged in. He's not mailing it in. He's really paying attention to all the little efforts that guys are giving and aren't giving. And so, no, I commend him for that. I think it's great. You know, he talks about Mike being really well prepared in Toronto. Claude is just as prepared, if not more prepared. And one of the things I can tell you, when you get into those kinds of situations like Claude was in, where he was fortunate to coach with the Olympic team and the World Cup, you're around those other coaches and you see what they do. And it's not stealing, you're just studying and you're seeing what they do to prepare. And Claude is as prepared as any coach in the league. So preparation's not an issue for the Canadians. I can tell you that. I would be the first person to tell you if it was. It's not.
Can you elevate a player in the lineup, in the depth chart, even if they may not deserve it, just to get them going if they're an important player for you?
I think when you're winning, you can do that. I think when you're losing, you have a hard time doing that. You see the quote out of Buffalo from Jack Eichel. Well, it's not out of Buffalo. They're on the West Coast. I'm sick of losing. Well, when you're losing and guys are sick of it, and then you elevate a player, Rod, into a situation he probably doesn't belong in because you're trying to get him going, the players in the room won't like that. That's a problem. But when you're winning, and let's say somebody's injured and a guy's, you know, you're trying to get a guy going, you put him into the injured player spot, sometimes that's not an issue.
Interesting comments. That was a late game last night that most people probably didn't see. He set up both goals again by Jason Pominville. He's doing his part, but they're winless, and that's what he said after the game. How much of this is a new coach?
I think it's a new system. They're changing some of their people on defense. They've had some injuries on the back end. One thing I can tell you as an organization, and I talk to their folks a lot, they want to make their team faster. They saw what New Jersey did to them with their speed the other day, and they don't want to have to go through that long term. So I think you're going to see them change a little bit of their philosophy. They're going to bring the Pittsburgh Penguin philosophy to Buffalo. It's going to take some time, but they'll get that done, and Eichel will be surrounded with really good players. You'll see. Just it's going to take a little bit of time.
Back to the Habs in just a second, but since you mentioned Pittsburgh, man, the schedule maker did not do them any favors. This if back-to-backs, they've been outscored 15 to what, 5?
But last night, they were in that game right to the end. Now, you got to give Vasilevsky a lot of credit. When he stops the breakaway, which would have tied the game, that was a total difference in the game. And Tampa was life and death to win that game. You could see Pittsburgh was manufacturing a ton of chances. It wasn't Matt Murray in goal. It was Antti Niemi. But when you see Jake Gensel going all alone and he tries to go 5-hole, he's really a good shooter and a real good deflector of the puck. It's like, oh, if he shoots the puck there, I bet you it goes in. But he tries to go 5-hole and Vasilevsky didn't bite. But I give Pittsburgh credit. They hung in there really well, really, really well last night. Tampa's good. We all know Tampa's good.
They won the game 5-4. Steven Stamkos with his first goal in about a year. So
what a goal, by the way. What a feed. So, what a play by Kucherov. Wow.
While we've been talking about the Canadiens' power play, which, you know, wasn't great. It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't as good as it should have been a year ago. And now it's, you know, it hasn't clicked yet. And people are saying, well, they take away Weber and it's like you throw up your arms and you wave a white flag. And the conversation we had with Aaron Ward on Wednesday, I like what he said. He said, just because they're taking it away doesn't mean you can't readjust. It's still your best weapon. His shot, like we all know that they're trying to feed Steven Stamkos, right? We all know they're trying to feed Ovechkin, and it works. So they came up with a kind of a different configuration, and I think based on practice, I wasn't there. But based on what was sent to me, it looks like Weber's a little down low, a little more closer to the faceoff circle, as opposed to being on the blue line.
Well, what that'll do is if they do overplan him, he'll be able to bump it down to the icing line, then they can create a two-on-one down low, because they'll beat, if Weber moves a puck quickly, the forward on the icing line will beat that defenseman that rotates out on Weber. He'll beat him to the net, and that'll create a two-on-one down low. And so that's not a bad idea. That's something that you want to think about. And then once teams start to protect that down low two-on-one, then you'll open up the Weber shot. So that's actually not a bad ideology.
He's not playing forward role. It's just a setup in the O-zone. But what I'm hoping for is some goals. You know, that's all I'm hoping for. Well, because the other way hasn't produced goals.
He hasn't lost his sense of humor either.
Yeah, I would say, and I wasn't there, but it's kind of like a biting sense of humor. It's like,
well, he does have that.
Yeah.
But, you know.
And like earlier he said, that's a coach's decision. I don't have to explain it.
Nope.
Right? I mean, that's
No, he doesn't have to explain that at all. That's not his responsibility. He makes decisions internally and says, here's the decision. Why'd you make it? I don't have to tell you. So that's okay. But I like that adjustment. It's a subtle little adjustment. What you'll see is if Shea's going to know this too, what will happen is the strong side defenseman will overplay on Shea, and then all he's got to do is just bump it down to the icing line, and the guy on the icing line needs to know right away, attack the net, because there's no way that defenseman will be able to get back and play.
No, I'm pretty sure everybody has tried to take it away for a lot of years. So have to do a better job getting it through, however that may be, and get the pucks down to the forwards that are paying the price in front of the net.
There's Shea Weber, and that might be one of the issues, forwards not paying enough of a price in front of the net.
I don't know about that. I've seen a lot of them get to the net. I just don't know if pucks are getting to the net. And I also think some guys are squeezing their sticks a little bit tight. But we'll see. It's too early to really mail it in on the team, but this is a huge game, and not because it's Toronto, but it's just before you go on a Western swing and to a place and a bunch of places where you really haven't done very well. And those teams are starting to percolate right now. San Jose got their first win last night, as Mitch said, so that's the first game. Then you go down to L.A., and that is a brutal back-to-back just because of the airports. You probably don't get into L.A. until around 3:30 or 4 in the morning. Maybe a little earlier, but not much, just because of noise pollution laws. You got to take off from San Francisco and not from San Jose or Oakland, so it makes a difference. And then, you know, you got a day off, and then you play Anaheim, then you have to come home and play Florida. So the schedule's not friendly. It's not friendly at all, and that's why this is such an important game tomorrow night.
And that's why it's important not to get too – even if they manage to straighten themselves out every point, you don't have, and I know fans are saying, well, you know, they started 9-0, and 2 years ago they were, what, 10-3-1 or something? And if they are like 2-7, and as terrible as that may look, and manage to take off and win like 14 of 17 at some point, yeah, I guess it evens out. But this is too close a league to be falling that far behind this quickly.
I don't think anybody's going on those kinds of 9, 10, 11-game runs in the middle part of the year. Once teams are really percolating, I just don't see that happening. To get off at the beginning of the year, that's different. But once teams really gear up, it changes. And this is just my own philosophy, I think there are three different times in the season. I think there's the first 10 to 12 games. That's one set of pace. That's a certain set of pace. Then you have the pace from there until just before Christmas, right after U.S. Thanksgiving. And then after that, it is just a whole other pace. It's a totally different pace. So I think there's like three different paces over the course of a year, and the last pace is really hard to keep up with.
So basically, again, the power play is going to be so key. Toronto has taken quite a few penalties so far this year. And that power play, I was watching some of the power plays in Tampa Bay when Jonathan Drouin was there, Pierre.
Right.
And it seemed like he had all his success on the left side. And I'm like, okay, why is that? Well, for him, it's easier to make a pass when he's on the left side because he's a left-handed shot. Mm-hmm. But I'm also looking at what was on the other side, and Hedman was a left-handed shot on the point, and Kucherov was a left-handed shot at the top of the circle. So he's feeding it across to guys who are open body-wise.
You're talking about last year.
After Stamkos was hurt. That's exactly right what he's saying.
Right, after Stamkos was hurt. And those two guys were open as the left-handed shots, but when Drouin's on the left on this power play, where he is more comfortable. He got chances in the third period when he was on the left. They moved it over. Mm-hmm. Shea Weber's not open for that one-timer because he's a right-handed shot.
Right.
So I'm wondering, is the problem with the power play the side in which the players are shooting?
Well, it could be, but you know, I'm just going to go old school on you. When I was in Pittsburgh and we had a lot of right shots, we did. Murphy was a right shot. Lemieux was a right shot. Mullen was a right shot. We had a lot of right shots. And getting them into the right areas is really important, but we were able to do it.
That's an issue on this team. They don't have any.
That's the reality of it. That's absolutely fair to say. But it makes a difference, but you have to sort it out. You have to find a way to sort it out. Detroit, by the way, I think it was 2 years ago when Mike was in his last – it was Mike's last year in Detroit. They didn't have any right-hand shots for their power play, and it was killing them because everybody was overplaying on Datsyuk and Zetterberg, and it was really, really hurting. There was no outlet for a one-timer, so it was a big problem. So I see Mitch Gallo's point. I really do.
You know who has a good shot who shoots left on the Habs?
Go ahead.
Galchenyuk.
Yeah, Pacioretty's shot's pretty good, too.
Yeah.
Pretty good, too.
But, I mean, if you want a Hedman Kucherov type of combination
to
on
me
that side.
When I look at the power play, when it's looked good, even though they haven't scored, when they've thrown the puck around, they've moved. They're in constant movement. Jonathan Drouin is skating circles. He's moving. He's changing positions on the back with Weber. They nod at each other. They're moving in circles. That's when it has looked good. When it's static, they don't. It's easy to defend.
Easy to defend. That's very true. The one power play, if you're a fan and you want to watch a power play that really works well, watch Washington. I know they were 0-for-4 against Pittsburgh the other night, but they create so many opportunities with what Mitch Melnyk was just talking about, interchanging spots. The only guy that's really stable in one spot is Ovechkin. He's the one-time shooter on the left-hand side of the ice, and everybody else, because Kuznetsov interchanges with Backstrom, Carlson interchanges with Ovechkin from time to time. I mean, they move, but Ovechkin's really the only guy that's really structured in one spot.
Sure, yeah, they play with a lot of enthusiasm and a lot of speed. They're a talented hockey team, so you know we have to when you play dynamic teams like that, it's really important that we play well structured.
When you see him firsthand, he's a big body, and you could tell he was not intimidated by the competition, and what I've seen from then and now is just a young player who's grown in the confidence area.
Carey Price on the Leafs, Claude Julien on first seeing Austin Matthews at the World Cup, Pierre.
Well, that guy's for real. he just keeps getting better. And everybody marvels at McDavid, as they should, but Austin Matthews is in the same discussion. He really is. He's just that good. Mitch, I know I've been telling you about him since he's been 16. And I remember Donnie Granato, who's the assistant coach with the Chicago Blackhawks, and I was the head coach at the U.S. Development Program. And we sat down in his office and just broke down tape on Austin Matthews. Matthew Tkachuk was on that team. Seth Jones was around that group. I mean, you watched them play, but this was a guy that stood out, really stood out. And the biggest reason why he stood out, his ability to digest the information in the game so much quicker than the other players. It just, his brain is wired differently than a lot of elite players. It really is. I call it the Mario Lemieux cool factor. I told Mario that, and I told Austin that, and then Austin said, really, I'm not comparing you to him, but you have this Mario Lemieux cool factor that very few players I've ever seen has.
Cool factor?
Yep.
Yeah. Define that a little further.
The puck, never intimidated in big moments, very composed, recognizes outlets. You can hold the puck a little bit longer. You can break guys free. You can absorb hits and still make plays. There's a coolness to their game. And I told Mario that, and he just laughed. He said, don't say that about me. I said, I have to. I saw too many great moments with you.
I don't know how cool this is, but I'm wondering if the stick infraction crackdown is, on the one hand, maybe helping the Leafs a little bit, but on the other hand, is it making it more difficult for defensemen to legally play forwards?
Alex Pietrangelo, who's one of the top matchup defensemen in the league, he told me it's going to be just hell on defensemen. I apologize for using that term, but I'm just paraphrasing what he said and using the term that he told me. He just thinks it's going to be so unbelievably difficult for matchup defensemen over the course of a year, just because players will continue to evolve and get better, and defensemen do not have the equalizer. They used to have the stick as an equalizer. They don't have that anymore. So I think teams that have really good defense coaches that know how to teach how to defend by establishing body position and stick position on the ice, Jacques Lemaire trademark, Jacques Laperriere trademark, a Larry Robinson trademark, and all those places, a Pat Burns trademark, you're going to have to get to that kind of element. And if you can't, then you're going to have a hard time as a matchup defenseman.
A reminder just before we close this out, coming up momentarily, a chance to win tickets. Who wore it? Gallo will ask a question. Who wore the Habs jersey? First one through with the right answer with 3 seconds or less to answer. We'll win tickets to a game in December. And we have the baseball playoffs coming up. Baseball talk with Bill Lee in just a few minutes. Pierre, another one of those moments. where I think of what you started to say and kind of mock years ago, nobody ever gets hurt in a hockey fight. Huh. Last night, Minnesota and Chicago. Even people, I was, you know, checking social media.
God. Marcus Foligno took it so hard. What a vicious right hand by Hayden.
And it was like, it was jarring. And I think even people, I think Frank Saravelli of TSN, who's from Philly, the long tradition there of rough stuff, he's uncomfortable with it. There are more and more people who are going, like, geez, do we really, you really want to see somebody not get up here?
Well, Marcus had a shield on, too, and it broke facial bones in his face. John Hayden grew up in Greenwich, Connecticut, and went to Yale University. So he's an educated pugilist, but he's really not that. He's a talented player. He is a really talented player. But that just shows you how severe. Now, Minnesota's in deep trouble. Charlie Coyle broke his wrist. He had surgery this afternoon. They already had injuries to Mikael Granlund and to Zach Parise. It's not good. It's not good at all. But I'll tell you one thing. They got a whole lot of help from the league last night because they never should have won that game. That was one of the biggest ripoffs I've ever seen on the offside challenge by Joel Quenneville, which was clearly offside, and they still counted it as a goal. That was pure comedy.
Well, you weren't watching the ball game, were you?
No, sir.
Okay, well, we had an incident in the ball game as well.
But, you know what, Rod? Pull it up for Mitch and show him. Jason Zucker is carrying the puck through the neutral zone, and Brent Seabrook's playing right defense against him. Seabrook goes down. The puck goes underneath him. Zucker crosses the offensive blue line of the Minnesota Wild. The puck is underneath Seabrook, and then it rolls across the line, but Zucker's already across the line, and they allow the goal to be scored. It was surreal. And I don't blame Joel Quenneville for going bat poop crazy. I don't blame him at all. That was crazy what I saw.
Can the Habs win tomorrow night without Carey Price being at the top of his game?
That would be a stretch.
Enjoy the weekend.
I will.
And talk to you about it on Monday.
I look forward to chatting with you on Monday. Have a great weekend, everybody. Mitch, Rod, Mitch Pagallo, thanks for an awesome week. Take care.
Carey's it too early to